So Romans 13, you see this is short. And it's unfortunately what I call part of these last chapters are what I call the cutesy chapters. Everything's been pretty powerful up to now. I think he was getting tired by this time. Tired of sitting at the word processor and going, oh, got to get some sleep. You know, 12 is so cool because it had, you know, the renewing of your mind, which is the big thing about chapter 12 and being one body. And 13 talks about your civil rulers, though. Now, what you always have to keep in mind, like I mentioned last night, is when he's writing this and when people are reading this, they're under persecution. They're not like sitting in a nice, comfortable church saying, oh, Paul sent another letter. Let's read it. You know, by the way, can you turn up the air a little bit? You know, can we get some new cushions for the pews? You know, they're living in persecution. They're underground. They're meeting in people's houses. So, you know, it's a whole different setup than we think. I mean, you can sit in the comfort of anywhere and say, oh, let's see what Paul says about it. You know, they were like moving these letters around so people could read them. And the vast majority of people couldn't read.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is why, like, if you could read and write, you were considered an educated person. That's why the scribes got to be so important, because they could actually write down what was going on. So he's writing this in persecution, but he's going to tell them about you have certain responsibilities to your government. So 13, actually 1 through 7 for starters.
Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. Therefore you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this you also pay taxes, for they are God's ministers attending continually to this very thing. Render therefore to all their due. Taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor.
This is a tough one, what he's saying here. Because he's saying, like, the government's there to make sure you're good. Well, this government was killing them. You know, but are you going to say the Nazi government was there to do good? You know, are you going to say the Bolsheviks in 1917 were there to do good? It's kind of tough, but he's saying you have to subject yourself to the civil authorities because God ordains them. You know, every election, you know, you always, if you listen to Christian radio, you always hear people say, you know, well, God puts people in power that he thinks you deserve at the time, either for good or for bad. So he says the government is ordained by God and they're also his ministers. Now, of course, every church has governing structure too, and the church governing structures are supposed to organize things and make sure everything's going well and, you know, organize teaching and so forth. The government, you know, he makes it sound like, well, the government's there to make sure everybody's doing good, so do good for the government, and if you do evil, you're going to be punished. Well, I guess most governments will punish you if you murder somebody, you know, if you steal from a store, But, you know, considering the government he's living under, you know, it's kind of tough. And, you know, the rulers aren't terrorizing you for good works, only if you do evil. Well, he was being terrorized for good works. You know, he says, I'm in jail. I'm a prisoner for the gospel. I'm not a criminal. So I always found this a little bit puzzling. So the civil authorities are supposed to punish. In fact, they have the power of the sword, as you see. So they have the power to imprison people. They have the power to execute people. They have the power to put people down if they have to, which at this time would have been the power of the sword. Wouldn't have been tear gas, wouldn't have been guns and billy clubs. Well, they probably had something like billy clubs. But the government has the power of the sword. And so we should be good. So the one commentary I was reading that you see there in the handout, you know, claims, well, Paul was talking about righteous government. He was talking about good government. He was talking about evil government. And, you know, maybe that's true. He was basing it on what the Greek grammar is that's in there. He's not just talking about every government. He's talking about a good government tries to keep the people from evil, which makes sense, but that's not really the sense I get from reading it. I don't know what you guys think. It just sounds like, hey, if you got Hitler in power, you just say, hey, that's cool. So he sets everything up and puts the government in place. And so you're supposed to support the government. You're supposed to pay your taxes. You know, you're supposed to support the government with tax. And if you don't want any trouble, just do good things in society. Don't break the law, just do. So what's the good, you know, and of course using the Nazis as an example again. You're doing a good thing by sheltering a Jewish family so they're not killed, but that's a crime, according to the state. So I don't know. It's kind of hard to support the state and do what is good. I mean, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. So anyway, we'll have to figure out what he means probably when we get to heaven. And make sure you pay your taxes and your customs and... So you know, you're supposed to know who to fear and who to honor. Well, okay, now how about 8 through 10?
Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law.
Okay, so let's pause there. So, love fulfills the law. So, this is, you know, in another place I can't think of now, Paul writes that love is really the only thing there's no law against. There's no law in Torah that says don't love people. Love's the only thing that doesn't have a law against it. And, you know, Jesus said that, you know, the law and the prophets all hang on love God and love your neighbor. That's what it's all based on. So in Deuteronomy 6, there's the whole, you know, the Via Hafta that we recite every Friday. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And then he added, the Jews do too, but Jesus added, because the synagogue added it, Leviticus 18:19, I think it is, says, love your neighbor as yourself. So if you love God with all your power and you love your neighbor as yourself, you fulfill all the law. So here he says, you know, don't owe things to anybody. You know, he says that in some of his other letters. You know, don't borrow money from people. Don't owe anybody anything. Don't charge people interest. Like Jesus even says, if you lend money to somebody, don't charge interest. So like when you get your credit card bill, say, you know what? Jesus said you're not supposed to charge me interest and you're charging me 25% interest. So please take that off. Then after they stop laughing. Love fulfills the law. And law does no harm to anybody. Love does no harm to anybody. So that's the first thing, do no harm. So he goes through some of the commandments, but everything is summed up in love your neighbor. So he only uses, the latter, the horizontal commandments. He's not talking about, loving God, not blaspheming, not having idols, not having, images, not having, keeping the Sabbath, the vertical ones. He's talking about the horizontal ones. He's talking about how you get along with everybody around you. And again, if you're under persecution and we're meeting in this room because out there they're killing Christians and we're hiding in here, if we don't get along with each other, then there's no hope for the rest of the believers. Now, is he just talking about believers? I don't know. It doesn't sound like it. So you're supposed to go out to the Roman guy who's killing your fellow Christians and say, dude, I love you. He'd say, good. 11 to the end. See, it's a short chapter.
Knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts.
Mm-hmm. So now he goes back to live in the spirit and not in the flesh. Here's how people always think these guys thought Jesus was coming back in their lifetime. Says he's almost, get ready, he's coming back. I hope it's today. But he was writing this almost 2,000 years ago. He says it's closer than we first believed. Well, yeah. Every day it gets closer. And when somebody says, Jesus is coming on May 11th of whatever. Well, eventually somebody's going to be right if you pick enough days. It's like, there was an old saying that if you gave an infinite number of monkeys an infinite number of typewriters, one of them would type Hamlet because by chance it would happen. So that the time is nearer than when you first believed. And, of course, that really applies to us. So he's basically saying, be a light to other people. This isn't a time to be asleep. And boy, this is not a time to be asleep. There's a remnant of people that were still holding on to truth. Everything else is going off the deep end. This is not a time to be asleep. This is not a time to worry about ourselves every second. This is not a time to say, oh, what can I do? If they want to be screwed up, that's their problem. We got to be awake, like the shofar blowing, wake you up from sleep. So we shouldn't be making provision for the flesh. We should put on Christ and live our lives, which is, he has said earlier in Romans, there's the flesh and the spirit are always in conflict with each other. The flesh wants to be satisfied. And it isn't just lust, he's talking about everything that's in the flesh, greed and comfort and lust and power and I want more money. How come that guy makes more money than I do? That's not fair. How come that guy has a nicer house than I do? That's not fair. That kind of stuff. Don't do that kind of stuff. Now, you ever think about people that are like totally driven by money and stuff? Then if they die and they're damned, 1 second later, they're thinking, what was I worried about all that stuff for? And it's too late. So he says, since the time is short, walk properly in the day. Not in revelry and drunkenness. I love when old ancient people say that, revelry and drunkenness. Walk properly and don't make provision for the flesh. And again, the context he's living, persecution all around, small groups of believers, churches meeting in houses, catacombs in this, here. But he's saying, you know, live like he's coming back today. And we should live like he's coming back today. I hope he is coming back today. Oh. But anyway, so that's chapter 13. Told you it was going to be short.